The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Eve Ensler, playwright of The Vagina Monologues. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's fastest-growing synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. We're sponsored as well by Jill Rich of Realty Executives, by Environmental Strategies, by Handmaker Jewish Services, and by Janos Restaurant and the J-Bar. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. I'm very glad to be here this morning. Frankly, I have to tell you, I'm very glad to be anywhere this morning since I was in a serious car accident about a week ago. Fortunately for me, I wasn't seriously hurt, although the driver who ran the stoplight and hit my car hard did manage to total my automobile. But after all, it's just a machine, and the principal fact is I'm very grateful to be alive and well, even sans Ford. It's enough to make me feel profoundly grateful to God for allowing me to survive to broadcast another day. Summer's winding down here in Tucson. If you can't tell by the weather, you can by the fact that traffic has begun to pick up and school children of all ages, including college age, are beginning to appear on the streets again. I've often wondered at the wisdom of starting the school year so ungodly early here in southern Arizona, just when it's only hitting 102 on the thermometer and the humidity is peaking from the latter stages of the monsoons, we throw kids back into schools which don't have air conditioning. It's all so they can get out of schools in late May, long before most other states have released their children. Very puzzling. In any case, my own summer vacation is now a receding memory, and I'm immersed in the beginning stages of preparing for a new Jewish year. You need to know that the Jewish calendar is a lunar one, based on the cycles of the moon, and that the first month of the Jewish year, Tishrei, begins with the holiday of Rosh Hashanah in about 5 weeks. It starts on September 15th this year. That means that rabbis, cantors, and synagogues are all moving towards full-speed operation at just about this time, and that the end of school vacation coincides neatly with the beginning of all the programming and education and meetings you could possibly want to experience all happening at once. In just 2 weeks, Hebrew school begins again for Jewish children. All children should be registering now for this essential part of their Jewish education, by the way. Here's a reflection from Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner on the knowledge of Hebrew from their classic recording, The 2,000-Year-Old Man.
Do you remember your Hebrew, sir?
Yes, I
would you
I think I remember it fluently.
Because I understand the modern Hebrew is different from the
Yes, it differs in some of the phonetic alliterations and patterns.
Yes. Can we hear an example of the ancient Hebrew?
The very ancient Hebrew is, hi there. Hello. Hello there, how are you? I'm all right, how are you?
That's English.
Oh, wait.
Do you remember any Hebrew?
Very little, I think. I don't think I remember it. I must have forgot a great deal of it.
I think you forgot it all, sir.
Maybe all, yes. Maybe all. Yes. It's thousands of years since I needed it.
So, if you don't want your kid to end up like Mel Brooks, or maybe look like Mel Brooks, get that child into Hebrew school at Temple Emmanuel already. In any case, in addition to the beginning of Hebrew school, within a few short weeks, the slightly manic madness of the Jewish High Holy Days will be upon us yet again. It seems to me that every year the High Holy Days come just a little quicker. No doubt it's just because as I acquire more years, the days pass by so much faster. Why, in one sense, it seems like only yesterday I was putting the finishing touches on my High Holy Day sermons for the 5764 year, and now I have a month to come up with an entirely new roster of important and indelibly influential pronouncements yet again. The increasing speed of change and the general sense that time is fleeting are central ideas for Jews at this time of year. It's a reminder to appreciate what we have now and to try to live each day fully and meaningfully. A good lesson at any time. Since this is the final full week of the Jewish calendar month of Av, so that by next week we'll actually be ready to start playing some pre-High Holy Day music, if you can believe it, to get us into the mood for the coming days of awe, before we launch into that musical wonderland, let's capture a few Shabbat tunes this week. Here's a pop jazzy Vishamru, a celebration of the covenant of the Sabbath, from Danny Masang. That was Vishamru, the Eternal Covenant of the Sabbath. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, as we say in Yiddish, email us at toojewishradio@yahoo.com, T-O-O, jewishradio@yahoo.com, or call 520-327-4501. When we come back, we'll meet Eve Ensler, playwright of Vagina Monologues, here on Too Jewish.
Teach your children well.
There's a prayer that reads, "Make the words of Torah sweet to our children." The best way to assure that children know and love Judaism is to give them Jewish values and knowledge in a warm, enjoyable, family-friendly community. The religious school at Temple Emmanuel provides outstanding Jewish education in one of the finest Reform Jewish schools in the country for kids from Torah Tots through confirmation. Our rabbis and excellent teachers help your children develop values that are important and eternal. Torah, Bible, ethics, pride in being Jewish, true spirituality, mitzvot, Hebrew, connection to our people and to Israel, and moral responsibility for society. Every student learns to celebrate Judaism in music, art, drama, and dance as well. At Temple Emmanuel's religious school, Sabbaths and holidays are wonderful, meaningful celebrations of the joy of being Jewish. Sign up now for the 5765 year by calling 327-6722. Register before July 1st for a discount at the Temple Emmanuel Religious School. Call 327-6722 now. Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114.
We are delighted to welcome Eve Ensler, the Obie Award-winning playwright of the Vagina Monologues, Necessary Targets, and the new play The Good Body, here to Too Jewish this morning. Eve Ensler initiated the V-Day movement, a global movement to stop violence against women that has simply taken off. Her plays include Lemonade, The Depot, Floating Rhonda and the Glue Man, Extraordinary Measures, Ladies, and Schoon Cat, among the better-known ones that we've already told you about. She received a 1999 Guggenheim Fellowship in Playwriting, lives in New York City with her partner, Ariel Orr Jordan. By all accounts, Eve Ensler is an unusual woman, as you'll find out in a moment. You don't just hook up with Eve, actress Glenn Close has said, you become part of her crusade. Time magazine wrote of her that Eve Ensler can soar to Rabelaisian heights or move us with quiet compassion. She may not save the world, but what other playwrights even think of trying? We're delighted to welcome Eve Ensler to Too Jewish. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, that's quite a lot of praise. How does that feel?
Thank you for gathering all the praise into one little moment. I just try to do the work, not think about all that.
You have created an international theatrical and cultural phenomenon with the Vagina Monologues and its offshoots, but when you first went to people with a play with that title, what did they say?
Oh, most people told me to change the title, or a lot of people did. Yeah, nobody was hearing it about vaginas in those days.
And you persisted. Why?
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't really know why, except that I had to. This, whatever the Vagina Monologues was, the energy of it or the spirit of it, it really had its own life, and it kind of determined my life and still determines my life to a large degree. So there were just things I couldn't do, like I couldn't change the title. I couldn't not do it. I couldn't not keep going. It just was bigger than me.
Your own life experience brought you to write the Vagina Monologues. You grew up in a wealthy Jewish neighborhood in Scarsdale. And this is well known, you were abused for years by your father, which led you on really quite a complicated path. I'm sure this is too simplistic, but was writing the Vagina Monologues part of a healing process for you?
Well, you know, I think all writing is part of a healing process. I think we write to make sense out of what we don't understand, and we write to bring kind of a logic or just an attempt at some kind of order out of chaos. So, yes, of course. I mean, I think that writing the Vagina Monologues and performing the Vagina Monologues really was a profoundly healing experience. I mean, I think if you say vagina enough times, I believe in the magic of words and the power of words, and that indeed if you say a word enough, actually something happens, things change. So 128 times a night for 5 or 6 years, you know, I'm a different person today than I was then.
And I think the society's changed too. I don't think 10 years ago we'd be saying the vagina on the radio.
No, we definitely wouldn't.
We will talk much more with Eve Ensler and a little bit later this morning here on Too Jewish.
Temple Emmanuel, the largest and fastest-growing Reform congregation in southern Arizona, invites you to become a part of all the wonderful ways we explore Judaism. Are you new in town? Call us for a tour and an information packet. Like to know more about Judaism? From an outstanding preschool program and excellent Reform religious school to the finest adult education academy in the country, Temple Emmanuel offers contemporary Jewish learning with depth, authenticity, and creativity. Try our outreach classes and our hugely popular Taste of Judaism series. And if you're looking for the best Jewish music in town, this is the place. From our string quartet to our Avanim rock band, we include every variety of outstanding Jewish music available. Most importantly, we make Judaism fun and meaningful. Come join us at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road. Call 327-4501 today.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan.
And I'm Rabbi David Freeland of Temple Emmanuel. Rabbi Chaim of Tzants told this story.
It seems a man was walking in the woods and he lost his way. The sun was going down, it was getting dark, and he began to give up hope of ever finding his way home. Suddenly, another man emerged from the darkness ahead. Delighted, he called out, "Do you know the way out of the forest?"
"No, I don't," said the stranger. "I'm lost too. But together, perhaps we can search together and find the way."
If we search together, we can find God, and meaning and community. Join us on these Jewish High Holy Days at Temple Emmanuel so that we can search together. Call 325-4888. Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson, High Holy Day services, and more. 325-4888. Please write us with your opinions, comments, and suggestions at TwoJewishRadio@yahoo.com or call me at 520-327-4501. And now it's time for our Campaign 2004 update. This one credited to our special author, humorist Andy Borowitz. After Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry crossed Boston Harbor in a boat filled with his former Vietnam War comrades during the Democratic convention, President George W. Bush attempted to upstage Mr. Kerry by holding a reunion of his Alabama National Guard unit in the White House Rose Garden. The former guardsmen arrived at the White House at noon and were immediately issued "Hello, my name is" tags before being reunited with the president. "Hi there, Johnny," the president was heard haltingly greeting one of the veterans before posing with him for a photograph, saying to another, "Hey, how are you doing, Dan?" The gathering was marked by a series of increasingly awkward silences as the guardsmen struggled to summon memories of their training days with Mr. Bush. "I'm pretty sure I remember him," said Tracy Connor, 57, of Mobile. "If I'm not mistaken, he called me late one night and said, 'Sign in for me tomorrow, will you, pal?'" After the 12-minute reunion appeared to lose steam, the president brought the event to a close with a brief, prepared statement. Calling the assembled guardsmen his band of brothers, Mr. Bush attempted to draw a sharp contrast between his military service record and that of Senator Kerry. Holding aloft his recently recovered Alabama National Guard payroll records, the president said, "Unlike some people I know, I am proud of my military service, and I will never throw these records away again." And that's our Campaign 2004 Two Jewish update. And now we are so serenely pleased to offer you our recurring feature of Two Jewish, the Zen Judaism segment. Here are some koans of Zen Judaism. There is no escaping karma. In a previous life, you never called, you never wrote, you never visited. And whose fault was that? Abandon false dichotomies. There is no distinction between self and non-self. The universe is one. You are all there is. Ask your mother. That was our Zen Judaism experience this morning. May your own week be placid and free of heartburn. In this 2004 year, the 350th anniversary of North American Judaism, we continue with our weekly Two Jewish American Historical Moment. Our American Jewish History Moment this morning honors Uriah Levy, the first Jewish U.S. Navy admiral and commodore, whose distinction in matters military was great, but whose lasting contribution to American heritage came in a different realm. Born into a large Jewish family from Philadelphia, Uriah Levy ran away at age 10 to serve as a cabin boy on a trading ship. Always a man of his word, Levy returned to Philadelphia as he had promised at 13 for his bar mitzvah. But at age 14, he returned to the sea. By the time war broke out between the United States and Great Britain in 1812, he was an experienced sailor. Uriah Levy reported for duty as a sailing master aboard the USS Argus in June of 1813. In August of that year, almost exactly 191 years ago, the ship Levy was sailing on was captured and the crew sent to Dartmoor Prison in England. Levy remained a prisoner at the grim Dartmoor Prison for 16 months. After getting out, he returned to the States and to his naval service. Reform-minded and progressive, after witnessing flogging in the Navy firsthand, Levy joined those who opposed corporal punishment, and in 1838, while commanding the USS Vandalia, developed his own system of discipline, substituting mild reforms for the then-ubiquitous naval lash. Because of his refusal to inflict corporal punishment on a young seaman, he was court-martialed and dismissed from the naval service. But President John Tyler himself overturned the decision. In 1857, the Navy again went after reformist naval officers. The Navy, well, you know, it's kind of traditional in its ways, and dismissed 49 of them, including Levy. Levy again fought the decision through a court of inquiry and was reinstated. After his reinstatement, he rose to command the Mediterranean fleet and received the rank of Commodore. Levy, an ardent admirer of Thomas Jefferson, purchased Monticello, the late president's estate, at auction in 1836 and publicly announced that he intended to restore the property to its original condition and open it for visitation. The house and grounds remained in the Levy family until the estate was sold to the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Foundation in 1923. Most historians credit Uriah Levy with saving Jefferson's architectural masterpiece and its magnificent grounds for the American people to study and enjoy. Commodore Levy died March 22, 1862, in the midst of the Civil War. He left behind many legacies. A statue of Thomas Jefferson commissioned by Levy stands today in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol. In 1959, the Navy's oldest Jewish chapel, located in Norfolk, Virginia, was renamed the Commodore Levy Chapel in honor of his dedication to his religion and his country. And of course, there is the double legacy he established, that in a free country like America, a Jew could rise to high military standing and could save Monticello for America and the world. And that's our American Jewish historical moment. We visit weekly with award-winning chef Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant and the J-Bar. Janos, we think about Janos and the J-Bar for food, of course, but there's music there, too.
And maybe we'll catch you to come up and play with us. Every Wednesday and Thursday night, we have music at both Janos and J-Bar out on the lower patio. Wednesday night, we've got a great band, Kathleen Williamson, Lisa O'Tay, Hal Rogan, and Ed DeLucia. They play keyboards and piano, and Hal's a Hall of Fame pedal steel guitar player. And every Thursday night, we have rotating bands. That's where you come in.
Uh-oh. I'll have to get our band to come out and play, I don't know, is this like a Janos tour?
The Janos tour. It's the summer music series.
And the best eating summer concert you can go to. What's the number for Janos and the J-Bar?
615-6100.
We'll see you next week, and maybe we'll see you at Janos before then. You can get CDs of any and all past two Jewish shows for a nominal fee. Call Temple Emmanuel at 520-327-4501 or visit us on the web at templeemmanueltucson.org. And now it's time for our old Jewish joke of the week. Global warming was reaching a climax, and a flood worse than in the days of Noah was foretold for the whole world. In just 3 days, waters would wipe out the earth. The leader of Buddhism appeared on TV and pleaded with everyone to become a Buddhist. That way, they would at least find enlightenment before dying. The Pope went on TV and said, "It's still not too late to accept Jesus as your Savior." The chief rabbi of Israel took a different approach. "We have 3 days to learn how to live underwater," he said. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, a special feature of Two Jewish Just for You, You Should Live and Be Well. You know, that Jewish ability to adapt to changed and hostile conditions remains one of the great strengths of our people. May we never again have to demonstrate it in the real world. When we come back, we'll hear an update on our Two Jewish Summer Stories contest from Amy Letterman.
Tucson's best-kept secret is out. Handmaker has beautiful new assisted living apartments and suites in addition to in-home care. Known for more than 40 years as Tucson's premier provider of nursing care, Handmaker now offers a variety of choices in assisted living programs, from minimal assistance to extensive services, including memory care, in our home or yours. Need more assistance? Handmaker offers the full spectrum of care and services, including nursing, post-hospital care, and hospice. Our friendship suites, studios, and our 1- and 2-bedroom apartments all include basic services, meals, on-site and community activities, transportation, and more. Experience the very best in health-related assisted living with Handmaker's team of seasoned, dedicated professionals. Nonprofit, serving all faiths for more than 40 years. Only a few apartments left to choose from, so call 322-7035 for a tour today. That's 322-7035.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism is available in just 3 fun, upbeat, 2-hour sessions. Tastes of Judaism, Tucson's most successful adult educational program, invites everyone to join Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi David Freeland for a 3-part class on Jewish values, spirituality, and community. There's no homework, all are welcome, and we guarantee you'll have fun and love learning. Classes are offered weekday evenings, at lunchtime, and on Sundays at 5 locations around the Tucson area, from the northwest to the southeast, to Temple Emmanuel and the Tucson Museum of Art in the central area of town. Sponsored by Temple Emmanuel with the cooperative grant from the Jewish Federation, Taste of Judaism is a marvelous way to learn about the customs, traditions, and ethics of Judaism in a non-threatening, warm, and welcoming environment. There's no charge for Taste of Judaism, and in addition to great and highly entertaining instruction, students get a real taste of authentic Jewish food. Call Myla or Wayne at 292-5816. That's Taste of Judaism at 292-5816. Call today to sign up.
Although our maven on Israel, Danny Bobman, is on vacation this week, we welcome Amy Letterman, the editor of our Two Jewish Summer Stories contest, with an update on the contest submissions. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
So, how's it all gone?
Well, it's been a wonderful several months. We received more than 34 stories, and stories range from wonderful memoirs about people that the writers knew. They talk about everything from birth to family members to stories back in Russia, uncles who were communists, poems about praying in synagogues in New York, and they really cover a full range of topics and are wonderful entries.
Wow, I've had all of those experiences. We're going to hear from some of those authors over the course of the next number of weeks. When you chose the stories, what kind of criteria did you use?
Well, it was very hard to choose the winners because really every story was a winner in its own right. But most of the stories that were chosen on the basis of topics that really had a significant kind of impact on me as the reader editor, based on either something that was unusual, something that was very poignant, a memory that was, I thought, that the listeners would love to hear about, and basically the way the strong message was written within the story itself.
These stories are going to be presented by the authors themselves, as promised, I might add, here on Two Jewish. And while this will complete our summer stories contest, do you think this is something we might try again later down the road?
Definitely. I don't think that we understood how much of a need there is in the community for people to tell their stories. And within a very short time period, and in the hot summer when most people leave, we got, as I said, 35 stories. And we're looking perhaps to have a replay of the stories contest in the spring. And hopefully we will have more submissions, and people who have submitted this time will begin working on their next stories.
Well, we are very much looking forward to hearing the first of those stories, and we're going to announce them in the Jewish Post, Arizona Jewish Post.
That's right. We'll have a press release announcing the winners, and hopefully we are going to have not just those winners read their stories, but several of the stories will be published in the Post in the coming weeks.
So tune in next week at 9 o'clock. We'll hear the first of those stories. Thanks, Amy, and we'll see you then.
My pleasure.
And now a word of Torah. This week's portion from the incomparable book of Deuteronomy begins with a powerful statement of choice. Re'eh, see, I set before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you listen to the commandments of the Lord your God. The curse, if you don't listen to the commandments of the Lord your God. That notion of choice is central to all Jewish belief. God gives us a clear choice between good and evil, between mitzvah, commanded ethics, and klala, the violations of transgression. The choice is always ours. It is up to us to act for goodness, morality, and blessing. I love Ruth Brin's poem on the subject, and so she gives us our Jewish poetry slam this morning on this very passage in Devarim, Deuteronomy. Are we free as the birds? Yes, and more free, for birds fly by the charts of instinct and make no choice in the pattern of their existence. Are we free as the angels? Yes, and more free, for angels, if they exist, live beyond evil and face no choices. Sometimes we seem like little children, round-eyed before a holiday table, permitted for once to reach for the sweetest cake. But we are neither children nor winged creatures. We are human beings. Freedom to choose is our definition, and ability to choose well is our portion of divinity. Let us learn to make each choice with wisdom. Let us choose blessing and peace. When we return, we'll get the news of Jews around the world.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan.
And I'm Rabbi David Freeland of Temple Emmanuel.
In Judaism, prayer only counts if you live it. That is, if your prayer changes the way you do things, at least a little. A prayer about, well, prayer. God, when our lives are shallow, deepen them.
When our principles are shabby, repair them.
When our ideals are tarnished, restore them.
When our hopes are faded, revive them.
When our loyalties dim, brighten them.
When our values become confused, clarify them.
When our purpose blurs, sharpen it.
When our horizons narrow, widen them.
God, in the year ahead, help us live the words we pray. Call 325-4888. Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson, High Holy Day services and more, 325-4888.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Continuing to advance Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's plan to leave Gaza, Israel now has plans to evacuate all Gaza Strip settlers by September of 2005. Sharon's national security advisor, Giora Eiland, was quoted announcing the plan Wednesday in the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, the first formal presentation of the timetable for the Israeli Prime Minister's plan to disengage from the Palestinians. Eiland added that all Israeli troops will be out of Gaza by December 2005, and that by 2008 there will be no more Palestinian laborers in Israel. There was no immediate comment on when the government would move on four West Bank settlements also slated for evacuation under the disengagement plan. In related news, the leadership of Reform Judaism, America's largest synagogue movement and one which I belong to, is urging the White House to step up its peace efforts in the Middle East and calling on Congress to refrain from passing one-sided pro-Israel resolutions. The policy recommendations were outlined this week in a letter to Secretary of State Colin Powell from Rabbi David Saperstein, Reform Movement's top representative in Washington. Citing a sweeping resolution passed last month by the Union for Reform Judaism's board, the letter states that the administration must match its public support for Sharon's unilateral withdrawal plan with a vigorous effort to bring the Israelis and Palestinians back to the negotiating table. Saperstein's letter also criticizes Congress for passing pro-Israel resolutions that fail to recognize the need for withdrawal to be directly linked to a return to the negotiating table and fail to address the troubling humanitarian conditions of the Palestinians. Both the letter and the resolution outline the Reform Movement's strong support for Sharon's general plan to pull out of Gaza and parts of the West Bank, in addition to offering severe criticisms of the Palestinians. Still, the movement's new policy statements mark a break from the unqualified support that almost all major Jewish organizations have voiced for the alliance between Sharon and Bush. Liberal activists stress the importance of such sentiments being officially voiced by the leadership of the Union for Reform Judaism, which represents over 900 congregations and 1.5 million to perhaps 2 million adherents. The letter also drew harsh criticism from the other side. There's no mention whatsoever of the lack of transparency, the lack of reform, the lack of dealing with security on the part of the Palestinian leadership, said Abe Foxman, national director of the Anti-Defamation League and a defender of Sharon's policies. Morton Klein, national president of the very right-wing Zionist Organization of America, said that the reform movement's position was unfairly critical of Israel. It promotes pressure on Israel and has the effect of undermining congressional support for it, said Klein, who frequently has criticized Sharon for agreeing to withdraw from any territory. Saperstein's letter to Powell, Klein added, only marginalizes the reform movement and makes it a part of the extreme left. Rabbi Eric Yaffe, president of the Union for Reform Judaism, rejected that characterization of Jewish public opinion. And I think he's right. There are those in the Jewish community who have either said or implied that they are not eager for the negotiations to be renewed, and that is not our position, Yaffe said. We wanted to make clear, as the largest grassroots Jewish organization in North America, that it's not our position, and that we believe that the centrist, mainstream position is ours. In another American Jewish story, nearly two decades after the ordination of the first conservative woman rabbi, the movement's rabbinical union is calling for dramatic steps to close what it describes as an alarming gender gap in the pulpit. The issue was highlighted in a study released last week that found a number of discrepancies, such as female rabbis earning $10,000 to $21,000 less than their male counterparts. Commissioned by the conservative movement's rabbinical assembly, the study attributes the disparity to gender biases in American society, as well as to the sociological difficulties in promoting gender equality after thousands of years of male-only rabbinic leadership. Interesting, the reform movement does not seem to have that same gender gap. While in the past two decades, conservative institutions have pushed for full egalitarianism and achieved great strides in women's participation in family and congregational life, this study suggests division between the movement's theological ideals and its success in selling them to the rank and file. There has to be more of an aggressive approach, Rabbi Joel Myers, executive vice president of the Rabbinical Assembly, said. There are certain systemic and cultural issues that have to be addressed more strongly. Rabbinical Assembly has 1,600 members, 191 of whom are women, constituting 30% of the conservative rabbis ordained since 1985, when they began ordaining women rabbis. Responding to the findings, the Rabbinical Assembly attached a policy memo to the study calling for nationwide reforms in the movement. Most good-minded people find it hard to believe that their own organization or institution labors under problems of gender disparity, said sociologist Steve Cohen, the Hebrew University professor who conducted the study. This is not a matter of fighting counter-ideology. It's a matter of alerting people to the issues. U.S. Jewish organizations joined a coalition that's planning a day to raise awareness about government-sponsored killings in Sudan. Some 20 groups are part of the Save Darfur Coalition, which is planning an Interfaith Day of Conscience August 25th to take place in churches, synagogues, mosques, and community centers across the country. The U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum and the American Jewish World Service are among the groups that formed the coalition. The United Nations has called upon Sudan's government to end its support of Sudanese Arabs who have killed tens of thousands of African tribesmen and are trying to starve as many as a million others through forced relocations, expulsions, and brutal attacks. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back Eve Ensler, the Obie Award-winning playwright of the Vagina Monologues, here to Two Jewish This Morning. Eve Ensler, in addition to her tremendous success with both the Vagina Monologues and her subsequent plays Necessary Targets and the new The Good Body, has also seen the V-Day movement, which sprung out of the Vagina Monologues, become a worldwide experience that has raised millions and millions of dollars, which has been given to organizations fighting for the rights of women all over the world, in Afghanistan, in Kenya, in Bosnia, Croatia, and Chechnya, as well as hundreds of domestic programs in the United States that combat rape and abuse. Thanks to the V-Day, the Vagina Monologues has now been taken to something like 30 countries, is that right?
76.
76
countries,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Including China, South Africa, the Philippines, Brazil, Turkey, soon to be in a country near you.
That's right.
I'd like to welcome back Eve Ensler. Eve, you have attracted a stunning array of celebrities to perform in the Vagina Monologues, from Jane Fonda to Glenn Close to Salma Hayek to, well, everyone.
How did that start, and why has it been so successful in attracting stars?
Well, you know, I think it's what it's attracted is really good actors who are looking for roles that express different aspects of themselves. And it started simply by just asking women if they wanted to perform in it. I think we live in a culture that doesn't often, you know, have a lot of really complex and varied roles for women. So I think when that opportunity arises, usually women who are acting get happy. I think also that, what I've heard from women who performed the piece is that there's something about being in a show with other women where there's great solidarity and unity and just this kind of energy begins to happen between women, which is very liberating, very empowering, and very healing.
A couple of years ago, you were quoted as saying, "My Jewish father was a perpetrator, but I couldn't speak about it in the community because Jews didn't perpetrate. When I began breaking my own shame and talking about my father, a lot of neighbors and friends were angry at me for being a bad Jew. Somehow it's un-Jewish to talk about that. We have to change that." Has that begun to change?
I think it has. I think it's harder. It's funny. I always have this joke when we go to different communities on V-Day. You know, every community says, well, there's no abuse. It's really impossible to talk about it in our community. And it doesn't matter if you're in a Latino community or African-American community or a Jewish community. That's the community where people don't talk about it. I have yet to be in a community where people do talk about it, by the way. You know, so I don't think it's atypical, but I think there are taboos that exist, particularly in the middle class and the upper middle class in the Jewish community, that make it very difficult to talk about things. And I think we have notions of who everyone is, but particularly each community has an idea that Jews behave a certain way and Jews act a certain way and Jews do or don't. I mean, for example, I remember growing up, I was told there were no Jewish alcoholics. Wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly that.
That was another story.
There's now a Jewish 12-step group called L'Chaim, which deals with the same issue.
And right.
We didn't admit it. We didn't have that problem.
Right. And, I mean, the good news is all of us, it turns out, are human beings. All of us are fraught with the same realities, and, you know, and that's the good news and that's the bad news. And I'll tell you what I was very, very moved by was the UJA's production of the Vagina Monologues and V-Day 2 years ago that they did at Town Hall.
In New York, right.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And, you know, they had a sold-out house, I think it was 1,400 people.
I think you talked about how this was sort of the ultimate outsider play encountering the ultimate Jewish institution.
No, it was amazing. It was amazing. And I remember this Orthodox girl got up and told her story and in front of all these people about how she'd been brought up to meet the perfect Jewish guy and the good Jewish boy and find the guy. And she went to college and, you know, she met the perfect Jewish husband who was studying to be a doctor and was handsome and had all the signs. And the fact that another girl had him up on charges of rape, she just ignored because he told her that the girl had made it up because she was brought up to find the perfect Jewish husband. Do you know what I mean? And eventually, of course, he tried to rape her. And what she said was, had she been brought up to find herself and to trust her instincts and to know what she knew and to be empowered in her own self, she would have known to trust her instincts about this guy. But all the emphasis had been put on finding the perfect Jewish husband, you know? And I thought that was just incredible. And the people were literally, I mean, they were awed. And they couldn't believe someone was saying that. And I would, you know, I think she has since gone on to tell that story quite a few places, and it's really opened up a huge dialogue and discussion in the Jewish community about the abuse that does go on.
You have been called by Time magazine the best feminist in America. Do you think that's true?
only a patriarchal institution would come up with that idea.
Well, I was just wondering, is it a contest? Did I miss something here?
How do you be a best feminist when there's no hierarchy? Like, it's such a contradiction in terms. What would that mean? I'm trying to figure out what
there
best
must have been like an arm wrestling contest to get it or something.
No, really, what is
something
that?
Appropriately matcha.
You know, best feminist, like I win at what? I don't even know how to respond to that. I mean, I think it's funny how there gets to be like one feminist Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know,
and
like
they become the voice of feminism for a period of time.
One playwright, female playwright, or one, you know, Secretary of State, or one, you know, we get one. There happens to be a lot of us, and, you know, I think what I'm always struck by is how we are, I think, the majority of the population, but there's still just one of us in any given thing. And I actually know many, many, many best feminists, people who have devoted their lives to transforming the rights and the situation and of women around the world, and I feel honored to walk with them in this world, you know.
How has Judaism affected your course?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting question, because I was brought up in a Jewish community. My father was Jewish. My mother was not. I went to 35 bar mitzvahs. I wasn't brought up Jewish, although my entire, you know, in terms of religion, although my entire community was a Jewish community, and my aunt and the only, you know, family members I really saw were the Jewish members of my family. So I can't say that the religion itself shaped me, but I will say that the culture and the spirit and the heart of the Jewish culture completely shaped who I am. And I see that manifest in my life in a lot of different ways. I see it in terms of, you know, this longing to be funny and, you know, coming in a tradition of theater where you communicate very sophisticated, difficult ideas through humor, but also in this tradition, which I think is the best of Judaism and in the best Jewish tradition, of people serving and really wanting to give, to be bigger than themselves,
to do
more for others.
To shape the world.
To shape the world. And, you know, I'm a child of the 60s, and I'm a child of Jewish culture, so I really believed all that. I took all that seriously when we...
Oh, they meant it.
Yeah, I thought they meant that. And I'm still one of those people living that, like, story. You know,
You're actually living it.
Well, you know what? It's funny. I think it really depends on what point in your life ideas enter you, you know, how deeply they take hold or take shape of who you become. And because I was formed in the 60s, and because the people I was most awed by and most, you know, most deeply revered and respected were people who were serving the world, and who were bringing about justice and bringing about peace and bringing about the end of starvation. Those people were the people I wanted to be. And it's still true.
And that's why you're trying to, in effect, heal violence?
I think for those of us who have suffered enormous violence, you can go one of two ways. I was actually watching this very terrifying program last night on Saddam Hussein's family. And it was really, really frightening. And, you know, just looking back at the origins of his life, you know, when he was born, his mother tried to kill him in her womb. She tried to kill herself. When he was born, no one talked to him for 3 years. He was brought up by an abusive father who beat him every day, a stepfather. I mean, his life was awful. Now, he then became this being, this psychopath, who completely disassociated from himself and really had no ability, I think, to feel compassion for anyone or anything. And his life mission became about dominating people before they could dominate him and killing people before they could kill him and exercising this horrible wrath over people as a form of retaliation. I think that's one path you can go to when you've suffered enormous violence. And who knows what it is that makes people go in these different directions. I think the other path that you go in, and I have met thousands of women, particularly around the world, who have gone in this path, is that rather than hurting and maiming and destroying and getting even, you actually hold the sorrow of your suffering in your body and your being, and you grieve it, and you transform it, and then you devote your life to making sure it doesn't happen to anybody else. And that is how you keep your sanity. That is how you stay okay in the face of what's been done to you. And I have to tell you, I think the greatest joy of V-Day and the vagina monologues, I've been to about 60 countries in the last, you know, 6 years. And what I've seen are these, what we call now vagina warriors, women and men around the world who are literally transforming violence. And they had this energy because of what they've been through that is fierce and indomitable. But it's not about violence. It's about ending violence.
Are you getting more political? There's this V for Vote fundraising you've been doing. You've had a long relationship now with Hillary Clinton. Are you thinking about running for office now?
What we mean by political. I remember Adrian Rich once said that the moment a feeling enters the body is political. I think I've always been political in terms of being involved in the political system as we know it. I've always been very suspect of the political system and highly distrustful of it, because I think what people have to do to get to where they are going is usually so compromising.
So corrupting.
And so corrupting. But I have to tell you, this particular time that we're living in under this particular administration feels like the most dangerous time we've ever lived under. And in terms of violence towards women, it is really shocking what has gone on in 4 years, whether it's the complete evisceration of programs that are working to stop rape and domestic battery, whether it's the promise to liberate the women of Afghanistan, and having been there, I can tell you that promise has not been at all realized. Whether it's the promise to free the people of Iraq, where since the U.S. bombing, 70 women are being abducted and raped every month, and that was not happening before the U.S. bombing. I mean, I feel that if we don't turn this very profound activist energy that VDA has created across the country into a vote, it will not materialize as anything substantial. It will be great that we have it, and it's great energy. But women have to now come forward and take leadership roles, both in voicing their concerns and also standing up to run to represent those concerns.
Tell us about your new play, The Good Body.
The Good Body. I always say this joke. Like, after I did the vagina monologues for years, I actually came to like my vagina and was feeling, okay, I'm home free, this is all good. And one day I looked down, and there it was, my not-so-flat post-40 stomach. And really, it had just moved. The horrible self-hatred.
Yeah, that sounds so American.
So I started to realize how much time I was spending thinking about my not-so-flat stomach. And I couldn't believe it, I couldn't believe that, I just couldn't believe with my life and my politics, so that began the next journey. And I think this play is really an investigation of how we as women particularly have been trained to be good, and all the forms that takes, and really how in being good, we get flat and we get thin and we get small and we get quiet and we get polite, and we basically learn how to disappear. And that we've really come to a point, I think, in history and time where women have to choose between being great and being good. And being great really has to do with standing forward with what you know and standing up and not being liked and not being approved of and maybe not being thin.
Well, still doing both good and great work and trying to remain thin but not care about it. I want to thank Eve Ensler for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Thank you, Eve.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, they really have fun.
Aleph, Bet, Vet.
Aleph, Bet, Vet.
Gimel, Dalet, Hey.
Gimel, Dalet, Hey.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
We learn and play all day.
We learn and play all day. Yay!
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, children are welcome from 6 weeks to pre-kindergarten. We've got small class sizes with a low student-to-teacher ratio. Our professional staff is highly trained and nurturing, and the school offers an all-day extended program with a rich learning curriculum including science, art, music, and dance. Of course, Temple Emmanuel Preschool is open to community members of all faiths. We invite you to come for a visit anytime. Just call Lynn or Melissa at 325-0390. Remember, at Temple Emmanuel Preschool,
we learn and play all day.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool on Country Club just north of Broadway. Call 325-0390 or go to templeemmanueltucson.org.
Thanks for being here with us on Too Jewish this morning. Join us next week when our guest will be, well, we think, Senator John McCain. Our playout this morning comes from Naomi Shemer, the great Israeli songwriter who passed away this summer. Her early hit, Machar, Tomorrow, a Song of Hope. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
המשחטות הישנות יגעינו תפוחי זהב. כל זה אינו משל ולא חלום, זה נכון, כאור בצהריים. כל זה יבוא מחר, אם לא היום ואם לא מחר, אז מוחרתיים. מחר, אולי בכל המשעולים ארי ועדר צאן ינהג. משל ולא חלום, זה נכון, כאור בצהריים. כל זה יבוא מחר, אם לא היום ואם לא מחר, אז מוחרתיים. מחר יקומו אלף שיכונים ושיר יעוף במרפסות, ושלל קרניות וצבעונים יעלו מתוך ההריסות. כל זה אינו משל ולא חלום,
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.